What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. The subject of this week's show will be familiar to many Naptown music fans. For the next hour, we'll be focusing on the life and music of the Indianapolis saxophonist Greg Bacon. Greg Bacon has been a familiar presence in Naptown for decades, performing jazz, blues, and R&B music at venues across the city. Bacon's career has been filled with many important highlights, from performing with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra to opening for Aretha Franklin. But we'll be focusing on Bacon's early years. Greg Bacon played some of his first professional gigs on Indiana Avenue. It was the late 1960s, and he was still a teenager, attending school at Arsenal Tech. During this time, Bacon played with some of the greatest legends of the Avenue, including band leaders like Baby Leon and James Bell. But Bacon's connection to the Avenue music scene runs even deeper. You might even say it's in his blood. Greg Bacon's family tree includes a pair of music legends who got their first start in the Avenue neighborhood, vocalist Trevor Bacon and saxophonist Charles Tyler. Greg Bacon discussed all of this and more during a recent interview with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's join their conversation.
Mr. Bacon, thank you so much for taking time to be here today. I'm a big fan of your work, and it's an honor to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, you're welcome. I'm going to ask you about some different projects you've been involved with, different points in your career. But first, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your early years. You grew up here in Indianapolis, right?
I did, and started playing music when I was a junior in high school.
Arsenal Tech, right?
Yes, Arsenal Tech. And been going ever since. I'm still playing. I played today.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody out there.
So Arsenal Tech doesn't have a famous music program like Crispus Attucks, but they had a really excellent music program. That's the school Freddie Hubbard came out of. Phil Ranelin came out of that school. Who did you study with there, and did you benefit from the music education available at Tech?
I really did, because it gave me my beginning. I had a very good teacher, Mr. Bachmeyer. I don't remember his name, but he was that good. I still remember his name, and that was in 1966.
Were you playing sax before you got into the band at Tech?
No. It started with a flute at home that my sister brought home. She's playing the flute, and I didn't play anything yet. So I decided, hey, show me how to hold that thing. So I taught myself how to play it, and that led me to take saxophone when school started back up. It was during the summer when I started playing around with that thing. So,
how old were you when you picked up your sister's flute?
About 16 or 17, 16 maybe.
Yeah, so that's when you kind of started taking a stab at playing music as a teenager. Did anyone in your family play music professionally?
There was a Trevor Bacon that I found out later that we were related.
Yeah.
I had to get it from him because nobody else plays.
Wow. If folks don't know, Trevor Bacon was a major vocalist in the 1940s, performed with the Lucky Millinder Band, and shared lead vocal duties with Sister Rosetta Tharpe. So that was
I listened to one of your programs.
Yeah. We just did a whole hour on
I was
the Lucky
very
Millinder
impressed.
Band and Trevor. Yeah. So you do come from a family that has some significant musical.
It had to come somewhere. Yeah. It had to come from Brother Trevor.
Yeah.
When the lights go on again, all over the world, and the boys are home again, all over the world.
As we're talking about, you know, mentors in your early years performing music and learning music, I did want to ask about someone who on your website you've listed as one of your mentors. It's a musician I'm very interested in, Charles Tyler.
Charles Tyler.
Yeah.
He was a relative, and he lived in France. He had about 13 children. I could be wrong, don't quote me, but he had more than a dozen. But he was a good dad, and he'd come to the States to see his kids and go back, and he came home. I remember him coming to my house, and I'm just starting to play the sax, and he came. He didn't bring the horn. Guess it was too much trouble. He said, "Hey, where's your horn?" Came over, he knew I played, so he made a special trip to see me. And he's probably 30 years older than me, 20, maybe, I'm not sure. But he took that sax, and I never heard a sax, you know, one-on-one with somebody that could really play. And it just kind of blew my mind. So I've been chasing that dream forever at trying to get at the level he was at, and which I'm still not there.
You said he was a distant relative, right?
Somewhere in the family tree.
Do you know kind of what the family relationship is with Charles
Tyler? Second cousins.
Yeah. And what year was this that he visited you? Do you remember the exact year?
1965, 64.
Yeah.
So after a while, every time he'd come home once a year, he'd want to see that sax of mine, and I'd get a sax lesson, a crash course on what it could sound like.
Charles Tyler was a major figure in avant-garde experimental jazz music. He came to national prominence with Albert Ayler, who's considered one of the greatest innovators of free jazz and someone who influenced people like John Coltrane. And, you know, Charles Tyler was really at the center of this world of free jazz and made huge contributions to that music. What did you know about his, at that time, what did you know about the kind of music he was playing?
Funny you say that. The barbershop I went to close to home had a bunch of older guys in there that that's all they listened to. So I used to go over and get sick of the stomach because I'm really R&B kind of rock and roll blues guy. I still am. But I still love jazz. So these guys would talk about this stuff that Charles was playing. And I would get to hear it. So if you get in there in a barbershop, sometimes you might be number four. So after a couple hours of sitting there just getting a crash course from these guys that know almost more music than musicians because they know who played with who and what year, and, you know, some sports buffs, they can speak that language as well, you know, talk about who played with what year and how many points they got and all that, you know. But, yeah, he was, he used to come home and play with the band sometimes. He would try to lead us down that road, but we wasn't trained enough to follow where he was.
With your band?
Yes. What, well, I was in a band. I didn't have a band.
What was the band at that time you were playing with?
Oh, my God. I had black hair now. I'm blonde now. Hey. Oh, let me see. I don't know.
What was the family sort of image of Charles? Because he was playing experimental music and leading sort of a a different sort of lifestyle. Like you said, he was playing in Europe. He was had a big audience in Europe, and he was living and playing in New York as well. What was sort of the family's image of Charles? Do you remember?
Well, they loved him, and they supported him. But he was over there, and everybody in his family had albums. They had the 33 and a thirds back in those days. So we had albums. You know, I think my family has some CDs of mine.
Any final thoughts before we move on about Charles Tyler? And you said he was an inspiration to you when he picked up the horn and you kind of heard the power and artistry of his music. Any thoughts on his legacy and your connection to him that you'd want to share?
I'm proud to be a part of him. I think a part of him is in me. Can you imagine? I've been playing sax about 6 months and your cousin comes in town. He can speak French and different languages, and he'd take that saxophone, and I would never hear nothing like that before. I mean, he would take it to its end of what it was, of his capabilities. And when I picked it up, it just didn't sound like that.
Yeah.
You know, because I was a beginner. And then next year, imagine next year, I'm better. He comes back and blows my mind all over again. So, yeah, I was very impressed by him.
And he kept a steady presence here. It sounds like he would come back and visit family.
Yeah, maybe once a year or every other year. So whenever he would come, he would find me. He knew I played that sax. So he was, you know, musicians, they are really close. Mm. There's no color barriers. There's no age barriers. It's beautiful.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. That was Steve Reed with Center of the Earth, featuring Charles Tyler on saxophone. Charles Tyler attended Crispus Attucks High School and was a second cousin of our guest this week, Greg Bacon. While Greg Bacon is known for playing smooth jazz, his career started during the era of free jazz. And Bacon has incorporated many experimental techniques associated with free jazz into his own playing. Let's return to our conversation with Greg Bacon.
One thing you told me that I found interesting is that you said you felt nauseous when you heard the avant-garde music, the experimental jazz at the barbershop. What did you mean by that? It was so different from what you were used to, it just made you uncomfortable?
Definitely. Most of the stuff you heard that I heard as a kid was W-I-F-E. And you were hearing
the oldies, right?
The oldie stuff. But yeah. I was hearing stuff that had a beat, and the swing jazz, it never stays anywhere. So you couldn't lock in on, you know, you had to understand the premise of just the swing style. So that blew my mind, and it was like, oh, God. But it started growing on me, see. You got to go get your hair cut about every 3 weeks. So it would grow on me. It would slowly grow on me. And listening to what they're saying, hey, you hear that licky guy did right there? And they would talk all that. That led me to go hear these guys when they came to town. They had always had a place that was small that Ralph Adams or somebody might throw a show, and it would be a jazz great there. So I'd go by alone so I could get my mind blown from all the people.
One thing I was always curious about you was your interest in this sort of music, because you play three horns at once.
Oh, God.
And when I see you do that, I think of Roland Kirk, who was someone who kind of bridged the gap between more commercial forms of jazz and the experimental sound. Was Roland Kirk an influence on you in kind of learning to play three horns at once?
Imagine not even thinking about doing it. You don't even play the sax yet, but you're hearing about this when I do play the sax, and I'm in the barbershop. So I'm barely getting through one, but it stayed in my mind. It stuck in my mind because these jazz greats cutting hair and the people sitting around, that was the local hangout, and they would talk this music stuff, and they would talk about him. and I'd see pictures. So lo and behold, 20 years later, when I've been playing sax for a while, I tried it with the two. It took about 4 years just to tune it up, just to get them in tune. You could hear the notes, but it was like, ugh.
This barbershop sounds like it was very influential on you. Do you remember the name and address of the shop?
It was on 30th Street.
One other aspect you're playing I wanted to ask you about, too, since we're on this topic of sort of expanded techniques, extended techniques of the instrument. I was told you're able to play through circular breathing, where the note is extended over sometimes minutes of time. Is that correct? Are you capable of playing saxophone utilizing circular breathing?
I do it.
Yeah.
I heard of people that died from overdoing it.
Wow.
So I do it when the people clap, it's time to stop.
Yeah.
It does something in here with the oxygen level in your blood or something. And a couple guys just fell out on the stage dead.
Greg Bacon played some of his first gigs on Indiana Avenue, working with legendary Neptown bandleaders like Baby Leon and James Bell. Bacon recalled his experiences performing with Baby Leon during his conversation with WFYI's Kyle Long.
You see, I played behind Baby Leon, and so wow. It's different kinds of music that goes on that. If it was a funeral tomorrow, some of the blues guys might not go to the jazz guys' funerals. They may not even know them or hung out with them. It was some cliques or different groups of people that hung together.
So how soon after you started playing sax and flute as a teenager, 16 years old, how soon after you picked these instruments up were you playing professional gigs?
I was playing in a band before I got out of high school. And I was just playing horn parts because it was better horn players that I stood beside. And all I had to do was add my part. So Elroy Burke gave me an alto saxophone because I was playing the one at school until I got one. He gave me my first alto. And then it was another guy, I can't tell you his name. Last name is Murray. He gave me an alto sax. So I had a couple saxes when I started. And I played in with James Bell. He gave me a lot of my skills. I played behind Herman Walker before.
You played with Words of Wisdom? Slaughter, yeah.
Slaughter,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, with the Words of Wisdom Truth Band.
Yes, yeah. They had a very good singing group. And, so it was like the skills I got from playing behind him and people like that. I ended up playing with the Voice Masters, who was Gene Chandler's backup singers. So right after high school, we went to Kansas City and St. Louis with the Voice Masters, who had a new single out on 45, so they were hot at the time.
I was devoted, girl, I was devoted to you. I saved and gave all of my love to you. I must have seemed so like a silly fool to let you hurt me, baby, and treat me so cruel.
And you mentioned you were playing with Baby Leon, who's one of the most exciting performers in the history of the city. Tell me about playing with Baby Leon. How did you get connected with him, and what was it like working with him?
All right, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
I want you to get in line. Have you heard about the Boogaloo and the Grapevine? But you haven't did one thing, baby, about the shoe shine.
Baby Leon had control of the stage. He was the entertainer, could grab that mic, he could talk and sing and dance and entertain and dance, and he was just a heck of an entertainer. So everybody had a band behind him back in the days. So I was the newest member and I knew the least. So I didn't say much. I just did my part and kept going. But as he was hot enough to where people would play behind him, because the club might have paid him and they paid band, so you're going to play behind him. That was the fun days.
And Baby Leon, he had his own unique style, but he was definitely a James Brown type of presence on the stage, right? In terms of the dancing, the showmanship.
Is that
accurate?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. What was the response from the audience to Baby Leon when he performed? Did he get a good response here in Naptown?
Yes, it was always a full audience. And they're going to clap for him because he sounded good.
Yeah. I hear a lot of tall tales about Baby Leon. What memories do you have of him and kind of his style and his presence in Indianapolis and just his lifestyle back then?
Energy, happiness, commanding the stage, talking to the audience. I still can't talk to the audience and be that relaxed right now.
Baby Leon may be gone, but he's not forgotten. Up next, we'll hear a lost Naptown classic featuring Baby Leon on vocals. This is Big Daddy Graham with Tighten Up Your Popcorn.
Hey, Leon!
What, Graham?
What they doing in that there Naptown?
They doing what?
They doing the popcorn?
Yeah.
They tightening it up now, man.
Really?
Look at that. Listen to what they're doing. Now, dig. Watch me now. Look at him.
I can dig it.
Look at that girl out there, man.
I see her. That's tightening up.
Now look at her. Go. Don't she look good?
Don't she look good?
Well, let me show you how I tighten up the popcorn. Now dig what I'm doing here in town. Dig. Look at that. Come on. Lord help us.
Oh, I can dig it.
What? I ain't gonna ever have your bottle.
I can feel it.
That was Big Daddy Graham with Tighten Up Your Popcorn, featuring the Naptown soul legend Baby Leon on vocals. Our guest this week is the Indianapolis saxophonist Greg Bacon. Bacon performed with Baby Leon on Indiana Avenue during the late 1960s. Let's return to our conversation with Greg Bacon as he shares his memories of performing on the Avenue.
And where on the Avenue were you playing? You said that you were playing gigs back then. I know Baby Leon played at the Place to Play. Would that
Place
been?
To Play, wow.
J&J Lounge, would that have been
J&J,
one of the spots?
J&J, yes. I just don't remember.
Did you play at the Blue Eagle?
The Blue Eagle?
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. During the time you were playing on the Avenue, what was sort of the ambience like there?
Just think New Orleans. It was 30 years later before I saw New Orleans. It was like New Orleans. It was a club here, one across the street, one down the street from there, and people would park their cars one time and walk and socialize. It'd be a social event on the streets. People would meet each other and talk for 20 minutes so, and just walking into Broad Ripple.
The musicians were getting along with each other. Was it competitive?
It's always competitive.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's what helped us. When we would travel, we're noted for sports and music out of town. Oh, yeah, you're from Indiana. I know you can play. They don't know if you can play or not. But that's what we got. You had to live up to it.
What were your impressions of the Avenue just growing up as a kid before you had a chance to play there? You knew this was the place where the music was going down. What was your impressions of it?
I didn't see it going away at all. It did, but I didn't see it going away. When that highway came through, well, you know the history of that. It's going to go through the most slightest, blightest, poorest part of town. It affected it all.
How did you feel seeing all that disappear and the carelessness of the city in preserving that history? And even today, here we are looking back 40, 50 years ago, talking about what an important place this was, and there's still been no significant recognition. How do you feel about that?
Only last hope we have is the walker. Hmm. It's still hanging in there.
Well, how do you look back on the Avenue with fondness, with happiness, with sadness that it's gone?
Oh, no matter what, I'm still happy because that was the beginning, and the musicians still kind of figure out where to go, where to play, what's still open.
What was it like being a teenager playing with these experienced adult men like Baby Leon? Was that intimidating for you? Was it exciting?
It was fun. I believe it saved my life. I would have probably been a thug. I'd have been out on the street somewhere. I mean, trying to, the influence of trying to hang with somebody you look up to that's not going anywhere. That'll do something. That'll change your life. But just getting out of town and playing behind people just kept me focused over there. I think musicians were more loyal to the band than they would be who if they might have a ring on it. Because we needed each other.
Did you ever play, you know, they were variety acts, right? It was sort of like the vaudeville type of entertainment style. Did you ever work with Tanya Dupree, the Snake Dancer, or Iron Jaw Memphis? Did you work with any of those
folks? Yes,
yes, yes. Yeah, yeah.
You've been talking to some people. Yes, Iron Jaw would skate at Robbie's Lounge and put a chair and be circling like this with the chair in his teeth. I played back in the day before LGBT and all that. I played behind male strippers, not male strippers.
They called them female impersonators.
Female impersonators.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they look good. They were people who come to see their show.
Right. That was a big part of the nightlife scene is what they called female impersonators.
That was big down there.
Yeah, yeah. And that was just commonplace to play behind these entertainers.
You play behind everybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody cared. We just wanted to keep working. Hmm.
Did that name ring a bell that I asked you about Tanya Dupree? She danced with snakes, and she would often play with Iron Jaw, female impersonator. Candy Laverne, any of these names ring a bell?
It does. Yeah. But it's going back in my beginning, right. But that was kind of shocking to see and to even be on that set to see these people.
Right, because you were just a teenager. It was
time. That putting you in school for real.
Yeah, yeah.
You're really in school for real.
But there wasn't any sort of judgment or hatred directed at these trans performers, these female personages. Yeah.
No.
Hmm.
No.
It was entertainment.
It was entertainment. We play all night, and one of them said, "Hey, Greg, take me home. Can you take me home?" Yeah.
One of Greg Bacon's most important early mentors was the band leader and vocalist James Bell, best known for his work with the Highlighters.
Hi, everybody. We're the fabulous Highlighters out of Indianapolis, Indiana, because of that big hit Poppin' Popcorn. Now, we know everybody out there can do the popcorn, but right now we got a brand new thing we want to run into you, baby. A little thing we call a Funky 16 Corners. Yeah, baby, you heard me right. The Funky 16 Corners. But first, we're going to tighten up on this music a little bit here. Come on in there, horns. Ow!
You know, talking about some of the artists you played with and mentors in your life, I saw on your website James Bell is someone who you've identified as a mentor in your life. James Bell is famous for his association with the Highlighters, but he's done a lot of other stuff. He had the Naptown Players, who I think you were a member of that group. Tell me about your association with James Bell and kind of, what he's meant to you as a musician.
That's where I learned everything.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about all kind of stuff, but that's where I practiced at with James Bell. And we used to kind of say, oh, what are we playing? Because we didn't know what was really popular out there. But we would go out, James Bell would have jobs, and we could play. And we'd get somewhere, and they would love him. So that kind of put our boots on real quick on what people like. You like one thing, the audience like another thing. He always had classy jobs. I'm still trying to walk in his shoes. He's a heck of a mentor. He still goes to Germany and sings over in Europe. He goes maybe once or twice a year.
Yeah. Yeah, he's famous and known for singing soul and funk music, but he can play big band music. He can do it all, right?
James Bell would have us as a blues band, his band, and he would be out with Jimmy Cole Orchestra and leave that orchestra that was over early and come to the club, wherever we at, and would actually have two gigs in one night, maybe three.
When did you start playing with James Bell? Do you remember what year that would have been?
Probably 1968, 69.
So that would have been around the time he left the Highlighters and was doing his own thing, right?
Yes.
What kind of clubs were the Naptown Players performing in? Do you remember some of the main clubs where you were?
James Bell had us traveling.
Yeah.
We wasn't here. I've been to Apollo four times, three times with James Bell.
Wow.
Because we played before. We played with ZZ Hill, Bobby Bland, Come On Next, and then BB. So in between sometimes our gigs, ZZ would have a gig. So I guess he more like manager then. He would just, because he just kept us working. One time we were stuck in a town and hadn't eaten. James Bell came and got all of us.
Wow.
He's like a father and a big brother. Yeah.
James Bell has cut a lot of classic records during his career. Let's hear an example. From 1969, this is James Bell and the Highlighters with Trying to Get Chosen.
Since our days of high school, baby, I've carried the secret flame.
Don't touch that dial. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from Greg Bacon after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. You're tuned to a special edition of Echoes of Indiana Avenue. On this week's show, we're featuring an hour of words and music with the Naptown sax great Greg Bacon. During the first half of the show, we discuss Bacon's early years performing on Indiana Avenue and some of the mentors who shaped his early career. For the remainder of this week's program, we'll listen to some of the classic funk and soul recordings that Bacon made during the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. Up first, we'll focus on Bacon's work with Epoxy, a dynamic hard funk band founded by Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign drummer Matthew Watson.
One of the groups I wanted to ask you about that I think you were a full-time member of this group, correct me if I'm wrong, is Epoxy.
Ooh.
Which was led by Matthew Watson, the drummer of the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign.
Yes.
Tell me about Epoxy.
Wow. Epoxy, we recorded a lot.
Matthew Watson, when I spoke to him, he kind of indicated this was his group, right? That he was kind of the band leader of this group. Is that fair to say?
He was.
Yeah. How did he put this group together? Who were some of the other folks playing in this band?
We learned a lot from him as well. I'm not sure how we all came together, but we had a nice horn section, and he would work the horns. He would kind of write a lot of horn parts, and we would record them. And of course, we would add our two cents in there to make it fit the style of music today. He would hum a rough copy of what he wanted to hear. And we would add to it maybe if we needed to.
It seemed like, from what I've heard, that band had a really heavy sound, kind of like funkadelic. How would you describe it?
Yeah.
Matthew Watson is such a dynamic drummer. I mean, he plays all these fills and, you know, he's all over the place on the drum kit. What was it like playing in a band with Matthew Watson?
I think people that could play, some people, we didn't really know how to count that well. Not well enough to where if he left the 2 and 4 and went somewhere, we might get lost. So he kind of played around with that until he got us all to be able to know where the 2 and 4 was, so that you could add and do different things. So I think that was what I remember most about him.
Just his ability to be a band leader and arranger.
He was a good band leader, good arranger.
Thank you.
from the unreleased 1976 album. This is Epoxy with Take It to the Airwaves, featuring Greg Bacon on sax. That was Epoxy with Take It to the Airwaves, featuring our guest this week, Greg Bacon, on sax. Up next, we'll hear a classic funk jam Bacon recorded with the Circle City Band in 1985.
So I wanted to ask about some of the records I do know you played on, because I want to play some examples of your work. And wow. I have one here. You played with the Circle City Band on the record Party Lights.
Wow, yes.
What do you remember about that?
Wow. Paul Thomas. I don't have a lot of memory of it. I've done a couple of gigs with Paul. But I'm a guy that plays 300 gigs a year.
Yeah.
So nothing sticks.
Yeah. Do you ever listen back to records like this and hear your solo, and what kind of goes through your mind?
I judge myself.
Critically? You harsh on yourself?
Always, yeah. I'm listening like with my nose turned up.
Yeah. Another record you performed on that I wanted to ask you about is with the Lynyrd Hamilton Group, right? Did you record?
That's who I was just talking
with
about.
Rice.
But what was his nickname?
Fat Man.
Fat Man.
Yeah, yeah. Please Send Love My Way. You played a solo on that record. And did you play on Mean Jeans too?
I did.
Yeah.
Man, I'd like to hear some of that.
Well, tune in. Tune in to the broadcast.
Oh,
we'll be
God.
What do you remember about playing on those sessions and playing with Lynyrd Hamilton?
He was an excellent singer, man. You know, to me, he was Prince before I met Prince. I mean, he just, before I even heard of Prince, he was like that kind of a sound.
Ask about some of the other great musicians you've played with. Chucky Bush, who's known for his work with the band Manchild. You played with him and had a pretty serious connection to him, right?
I wouldn't have a CD out if it wasn't for Chucky Bush. Chucky Bush wrote two or three CDs on me. Chucky Bush is responsible for getting my career started. I mean, I was playing all the time anyway. He just decided, man, you need a CD, man. because he had been in and out of doing a lot of different stuff. So we started he started recording me, and he's such a fair, honest guy. He was like, man, you ain't wrote no songs? You can't throw this CD out here, man. You got to have one or two songs on there. Because, see, I didn't know, but the ones that write get the money. I just, like, back then, I still was loving being a part.
And you mentioned it was, you know, well into your adult life when you started forming your own group. You'd been so busy as a session player, as a sideman, taking gigs, touring with different acts. What was it that prompted you to put your own thing together?
Wow. Back in the day when Grover Washington was strong and Kenny G was just getting started, and it was, one thing was still pretty popular. I guess it started way back then. I remember it was Kevin Anker. Randall Connor was the drummer.
You had Cynthia Lane in one of your bands,
right? Cynthia
Lane
was the singer. Yeah. So I heard all these people individually, talked to them on the phone, and we got together because they liked the idea.
You had an all-star band.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Many times we felt held back, obstacles in our way. But you loved me and I loved you. That's all that we could do. So now we're ready for the big payoff. Love and happiness forevermore through the open door of eternity. Baby, listen. Like a summer breeze, you blow my mind. You treat me so good and kind. But I always risk when I can't find the way into your heart. So I stay with you.
A lot of these records you played on are now would be termed cult classics, right? Especially like Paul Thomas, Circle City Band. You know, people all over the world are jamming to his music to this day. How do you feel about, you know, kind of the legacy of all this music you've been part of? Now it's all part of this legendary history of Indianapolis music and the Avenue, and this is something that music fans all over the world are listening to and enjoying. How do you feel to be part of that legacy?
It's wonderful. It's in my resume, James Bell and different people like that. I'm just glad to be a part. You know, I just did my little part, and then it seemed like after a lot of people retired, I just kept playing. I just like to perform.
Seems like you're still carrying on the sound and style of performance that thrived on the Avenue. Do you feel that way?
Well, yes, because that's popular music there. And I just stayed right where the popular music was with what people like. You put a name on it, and you're getting in trouble right then.
We've talked about so many aspects of your work so far. You know, you mentioned performing with the symphony, opening for Aretha Franklin, making your own solo albums. You're still a hardworking musician, playing 300 gigs a year, as you mentioned. What's left that you haven't done that's still something you're yearning to do?
Glad you said that. I feel like I got one more chapter in me. Part of me wants to retire and just not do that much. But I'm better than I ever been right now. So 5 years ago, I'm better now than what I was 5 years ago. So I need to do some recording. I'd like to do this one song. I hooked up speakers. I turned my garage into a man cave. I spent a lot of money just to hook up that cable to those speakers. So I put it on the smooth jazz station. And I listened to music all day. Didn't hear no Greg Bacon on there. So that's me. I got to put together a front office that can figure out how to get me on that TV, on that playlist, some kind of way.
Folks want to learn more about your music, book you. You have a website, gregbacon.com, right? And you spell your name G-R-G-G with two G's.
Got to have the egg in there.
Gotta have the egg in there. Egg and bacon, right?
Yeah, you spell Greg with the egg in there.
Yeah.
Greg.
And folks can contact you for booking. And also,
yeah,
I think
Greg Bacon Entertainment is my website, or you can hit gregbacon.com.
I can't thank you enough for taking time to be here today. It was an honor to have you here. And like I said, I've been watching you for years and just been amazed by the breadth of your talent. So thank you so much for being here and take time
Thanks
to do this.
Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Our guest this week has been the Naptown sax great Greg Bacon, who started his career performing on Indiana Avenue during the late 1960s. You can find more information on Bacon's work online at gregbacon.com. And you can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter. Thanks for listening.
Nobody knows on Uptown, baby, like